Thursday, February the 13th, was a full day of the British. Lyndon had lunch at the embassy as the guest of honor of the Prime Minister, Sir Douglas Hume. A stag luncheon with a working group. Then in the afternoon, Robin Duke picked me up and we went to tea at the embassy, where there were Mrs. Rusk, Mrs. McNamara, Phyllis Dillon, Eunice Shriver, Ethel Kennedy. That ancient but still redoubtable dowager, Mrs. Robert Woods Bliss of Dumbarton Oaks, Mrs. Nicholas Longworth, 80 years old plus one day, and the spryest of the lot, the British party, including, of course, Miss R.A. Butler, Miss Maxwell Taylor, and Jackie's mother, Mrs. Hugh Auchincloss. My hostess, the elegant and serene Lady Ormsby Gore, I had seen earlier that morning in what was undoubtedly one of the funniest pictures of the year. She, being sedate and dignified and utterly above in company with the Beatles, mop-headed foursome from Great Britain who are here singing and starting all the teenagers into just a frenzy of cheers and near hysteria. It would have taken the powers of Lady Ormsby Gore to appear with the Beatles and still come out unscathed. Lady Ormsby Gore settled me on a couch, and where they passed delicious little tea refreshments, which nobody needed. Everybody had had a big luncheon, and then brought around guest after guest to chat with me. One of the most interesting was Mrs. Bliss, who, although a little deaf and difficult to talk to, has accumulated one of the world's most beautiful list of possessions. The grounds of Dumbarton Oaks are exquisite. And then she has there now the pre-Columbian art exhibit, which is high on my agenda of something to go to. She's filled her life with beauty and knowledge, and let a lot of it spill over into her beloved city of Washington. Then came the big event of the day, the dinner for the British, for which I had purchased a new red evening dress and was going to use for the first time my hairpiece, which I hope would make me look dignified and elegant. Alas! What a letdown to walk in and hear Lyndon say, "Why did you let them make you look like you were 65 years old?" We met Sir Alec and Lady Douglas Hume, the butlers and the Ormsby Gores at the front door at about 7:45 and took them upstairs to the Yellow Room, where with the usual small group, including, of course, the Secretary of State and Virginia Rusk and our keeper, Angie Duke. We had a drink, a little pleasant conversation, and then went in to exchange the gifts. We are counting heavily on her real interest in gardening, for my gift to her was a vast series of gardening books, plus some magnolia seeds from my old loved home, the Elms. If she really doesn't like gardening all that much, I hope she's got enough attic space to put them in. We also gave a document signed by Thomas Jefferson, which I would have liked to have kept myself, and the National Geographic map case, which I think can hardly be beat, to the Prime Minister as a man's gift from a man. Sir Alec and Lady Douglas Hume gave us a handsome pair of Crown Staffordshire hawk owls and an antique Georgia III silver desk set, in spite of the paper having called it a sweetmeat basket. We went down the by now almost familiar stairs to the tune of Hail to the Chief, with full pomp and display, flags, red-coated marine band, cadre of photographers. Not an almost too lengthy stop for picture taking, and then on into the East Room to stand in line. This time I had someone behind me who very clearly gave me the names, which was a great help because I like to know in the one instant that I see that individual, I may never get back to them all evening long, that that's a guest in my temporary home, and I want to have a one-moment exchange with the eyes, if nothing else. Besides, I just don't want to murmur glub as I introduce the individual to the lady standing by me. The guest list, as usual, was a montage from the Hill. There were the Russell Longs and the Clinton Andersons and the Jack Brooks of Texas. From the wider field of politics, the governor of Minnesota and Mrs. Rolvag. Mayor Dick Daley of Chicago and that coming young couple, the Eugene Wymans from Los Angeles, California. I think he's national committeeman. Among old friends, it was especially nice to see Abe and Carol Fortas there. And Tom Corcoran, with his little daughter whose eyes were out on stems, it was clearly a fairy dream of a night for her. And then the Ed Weisels down from New York, the first public appearance Alice has made since the removal of her jaw, and a very courageous thing for her to do. I thought it was high time we worked in some Texans, and so we had Joe Albritton, the Stanley Marcuses of Dallas, Cameron McElroy from my own hometown of Marshall, the Bill Knowles of Odessa, and Marlon Sandlin of Houston, who's head of the English-speaking union, and David Searles, also of Houston. My friend Alex Rose of the Hatters Union represented labor, and from the field of education, there were Dr. and Mrs. Courtney Smith of Swarthmore College. He heads the Rhodes Scholarship Program, the Edwin Russells of Condé Nast, Vogue, and so forth. Dr. and Mrs. Nabrit of Howard University, and a couple of Negro educators from a Virginia college, I believe Dr. and Mrs. Philip Butcher. Oh yes, from the publishing world, I certainly shouldn't have forgotten my friends, the John Carters of McCall's. And then, if one could be so daring as to lump culture and entertainment together, Lynn Drury, my old friend, Albert Finney, that bright new young English actor who leaps nimbly from bed to bed in Tom Jones on the movie screens today and is the rage among the young girls. Myra Davis, who led that famous band for so many years and has played for 6 presidents, and tonight he played for his 7th for us. And then our friend since about 1939, Eric and Ann Leinsdorf, he's the conductor of the Boston Symphony Orchestra. And John Steinbeck, one of my really favorite authors. And certainly not to be forgotten by himself or ignored by anybody else, Mr. and Ms. Milton Berle of Beverly Hills, California. Always on hand when the Democratic Party is in need of help. There were about 130 of us, seated at round tables for 10 each, with a head table for 20. I had a really good time with Sir Alec on my right, and Mr. Butler on my left. Lyndon's toast was no less true because it's been said over and over. The kind of government we have today was born on the fields of Runnymede. Our system of fair play was lifted right out of the classic debates in your House of Commons. Our concepts of human rights and freedoms come from many sources, but their tap roots were nourished in English soil and watered with English blood. And then he got a little laughter into it when he referred to himself and Sir Alec as country boys and said, one thing they shared in common, this Scotch Highlander and this Texas rancher, was a love of the land. He got a laugh. I don't know how wry he may have been. I mean, on the part of some of the others, when he said he would permit no fundamental differences between the two nations as long as Sir Alec is Prime Minister, and others may judge how long that will be. After Sir Alec's graceful and decorous toast, in which the only time he touched on the subject of their trade with Cuba was to say that we may have to send buses to Cuba, but we will not let anything fundamental interfere between us. And after the strolling strings had wound among us, bringing their magic and their melody, we got up and went into the East Room and started dancing. About 200 more people joined us, including the ambassadors, that now diminishing line of ambassadors from the Commonwealth countries. I had asked Diana and Donald because he has dual citizenship, Scotch as well as United States. And besides, she'd worked hard enough the night before trying to help keep the French-speaking people happy and the people that she'd known through her work on the African desk happy, that I thought she deserved to get to see somebody who meant a lot to her husband's background. They both come from Scotland. I wonder if it could have been my imagination when I thought I saw a twosome dancing from Pakistan and India. I don't quite remember whether it was Mrs. Ahmed and Mr. Nehru or the other way around. At any rate, everybody got into the spirit of things, and there was a lot of delightful dancing. There were cabaret tables seated around and champagne being passed so that anybody who didn't want to dance could sit down and be comfortable. Dancing is one of my favorite joys, and I had a pleasant turn with Bill Walton, chairman of the Commission of Fine Arts, and my tall friend Bill Batt of ARA. But rather soon, I took up my stand in the hall to tell people goodbye. The Prime Minister and Lady Douglas Hume left shortly after 11, but I stayed downstairs until close to 12 because there were many people that I really just yearned to visit with, especially the Wiesels, especially the Texans, most particularly Cameron and Lucille McElroy. At one point, I saw the Prime Minister having a very earnest tete-a-tete with Walter Lippmann, Dean of the Columnists, over in a corner. That was a conversation I would like to have eavesdropped on. Among the 200 who came in after dinner to dance, I noticed a lot of 1960 Johnson Advance people, just the kind of folks I want to have around me. And then there were members of the British Party whom we had not been able to invite to the dinner, and a lot of State Department workers, as well as some of the Johnson staff. A little glitter for the late hours, and a lot of love.